The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. And since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again. Well, make my day, pal. I'll even do it twice. So let's pick the dates, Donald. I hear you're free on Wednesdays.
The polling numbers must be absolutely terrible. Here is the fake president calling on Donald Trump. Now, anytime, any place, you've got to meet up and debate. Donald Trump, by the way, answered his challenge. He challenged the bluff. So this ought to be interesting. But just coming back to what he said there, who talks like this? Who says that he's selling himself as a great unifier? And yet look at how he talks about Donald Trump, the opponent. I'll meet up with you anyway, anywhere you say, pal. And then, of course, very quickly thereafter, they set some very, very tight parameters within which Donald Trump seems fine to stay. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this beautiful, a little bit windy, kind of a bad hair day for me, but we'll work through that. But this is a beautiful time of year for Oklahoma. Lots of sunshine, milder temperatures. So we're glad, though, that we can hibernate in the studio for 55 minutes and talk to you wherever you may be as you watch this program. You can get to it at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. When I saw Joe Biden's challenge this morning, I first thought to myself, is this real? They're panicking. And they want it sooner rather than later. They want a debate in June. They see what's happening. They see the catastrophic polling numbers. And so they're reaching out in desperation. You wonder if the dear leader's behind the scenes saying, look, if you don't do something quick, if you don't turn this around quick, we're pulling the rug out from under you. And so June it is. But you watch just the daily cycle. We do it, of course, every weekday morning. And you don't know if it's real or fake. It's kind of like the King Charles portrait. Who thought of that idea? Even he seemed terrified when he unveiled it. He's in a bright red uniform surrounded by this blood red background. I mean, this is bizarre. You see it and you think this can't be real. And yet, I guess it is. There you go. There's the official portrait, or one of them, for King Charles. Surrounded by this blood background, leaving all these critics to wonder, is this some kind of a satanic image? Is there some kind of a satanic message? So here's Joe Biden, you know, the hula hoop president, who campaigns from the basement. Now he's all but calling Donald Trump a coward because he won't answer the challenge. And what's hilarious is that Trump answers the challenge. I don't know what the exact time frame was, but I'll get to what he said on Truth Social in just a second. But listen to the Biden people. Biden issues his challenge. By the way, it's a 14-second video. There's five jump cuts, and he's undoubtedly reading from a teleprompter. That's how everything has to be so carefully scripted. How many takes did it take? You wonder. He issues the challenge, and then out come the spokespeople saying, you know, it's certainly got to be at CNN, because, you know, CNN's the one that censors Donald Trump. It's perfect. It's a perfect marriage. The regime media, together with the regime. Listen to clip 10.
Listen, the president himself did not mince words, right? He said that he beat Donald Trump twice in 2020. Donald Trump hasn't debated since. The president is happy to debate. He's happy to do it twice. And he thinks that we should do this sooner rather than later so that the American people can see the stark choice that's in front of them in this election. We should do it in June after Donald Trump's criminal trial is likely to conclude and after the president returns from the G7 summit. And then we should have a second debate in September.
In June, the first one after the Manhattan trial. And you'll notice from the fake president's statement this morning, he says, I hear you're available on Wednesdays. That's the days that he's had off from this this show trial. So there he is, just taunting Donald Trump. I'll meet wherever you want, pal. Who talks like this? This is the Democrat and the Republican leading up to a presidential election. And then out come the spokespeople. And it's got to be on their home turf for sure. Just the news. Biden says he accepted offer from CNN for June 27 debate. Over to you, Donald. Over to you, Donald. Over to you, pal. It's like it's a WWF contest or something. Listen again to this same spokesperson on a later show this morning, clip 12.
So you say no live audience. You want it in a television studio without an audience. Does that mean if the Trump campaign insists on an audience, no deal?
It should be yes, in studio with no audience so that the candidates can clearly articulate their vision for the country.
Is an audience a deal breaker? Is an audience a deal breaker for you?
The pregnant pause. No audience. It's got to be inside a TV studio. CNN has to control or moderate the debate. Those are the parameters. And then, as I say, what's hilarious is out comes Donald Trump's statement within an hour or so. Crooked Joe Biden is the worst debater I have ever faced. He can't put two sentences together. Crooked is also the worst president in the history of the United States by far. It's time for a debate so that he can explain to the American people his highly destructive open border policy. New and ridiculous EV mandates. And we've got an update, by the way, on the EV charging stations that were supposed to be all over the country after we just pumped billions and billions into this EV initiative. Weak foreign policy, which is allowing the world to catch on fire. He says, I am ready. This is Donald Trump, keep in mind. I am ready and willing to debate Crooked Joe at the two proposed times in June and September. I would strongly recommend more than two debates. And for excitement purposes, a very large venue, although Biden is supposedly afraid of crowds. No crowds. Or if it is a crowd, just a very, very small one, a few hula hoops, you're taken care of. No crowds because, as Donald Trump points out, he can't draw a crowd. And his people can't stand the thought of a crowd of people actually cheering on the policies of Donald Trump. Can't handle that. At least you know if there's only going to be a CNN host and producer and a few cameramen, at least you know that they'll shut down Trump as soon as he's onto something really good, really popular. This is amazing. The New Republic. The Democrats have a Joe Biden problem. This is why the Biden team this morning flip-flopped and said, hey, now we're really excited about debates. It's Donald Trump who's running away from them. At the New Republic, it says the Times poll suggests that they may be open to another Democrat who holds similar positions. It's just commenting on all of these swing state polls, which have Donald Trump leading the way in Nevada by 13 points. He was finished. 2 seconds ago, he was finished. Not now. They know they're running out of time. And in some ways, they're not panicking enough, which makes you wonder, is the last resort taking to the streets, civil war, unrest in a city near you? They're willing to do anything, as my father wrote back in 2018, to maintain their grip on power. They're not going to let go. This article mentions Gretchen Whitmer, perhaps Gavin Newsom. There's been talk, Michelle Obama even. It would, at this late stage, necessitate a costly floor fight at what would be a volcanic convention in August. It could lead to Vice President Kamala Harris, who is much younger but similarly unpopular, becoming the nominee. So they're both deeply unpopular. Listen, we saw this the other day. Didn't think it was worth playing. But together with the challenge coming from the fake president, listen to the fake vice president from a few days ago, clip two.
We have to know that sometimes people will open the door for you and leave it open. Sometimes they won't. And then you need to kick that door down. Excuse my language.
Yeah, just laugh at all the profanity. It's not like there's no profanity on the other side, but this is really hard and painful to watch. Just, yeah, the unifiers out there talking about, if you can't get the door open, just bust it down. Come on, pal, let's get together for a debate. And they talk about, the same people are out there talking about the coarse language that you'll see coming from Donald Trump, a Truth Social post or whatever. This same New Republic article, it says, the polling has been telling the same story about Biden for months now. Voters do not like him. They've got a Joe Biden problem, the Democrat Party. Voters don't like him. They don't trust him. They think he is not fit to be president. So we'll see how that these televised debates go. Is this yet another strategy that's going to backfire just spectacularly, even without the studio audience? Surely the Trump people will insist that it be live so that they can see whether he actually can string two sentences together, the fake president, to see if he can actually defend his policies, whether it's on the wide open border or inflation or all the EV stations that are supposedly being built that nobody are using or nobody's using. They're getting desperate, and you can see it. You can see it in these unexpected announcements where you half are wondering if it's actually real. There's not a lot of really good options unless it were to be, you know, Michelle Obama. But even the Obamas, as I was saying on yesterday's show, they're being exposed. They're making hate great again. That's what's motivated and fueled that man's from 2008 on. And he had all the smooth sounding words that you would expect from an angel of light. But look at the actual policy. You see it in the tone coming from Joe Biden's challenge. Sure, let's get together, pal. You see it in the way they go after Donald Trump in court. We've got a short update on that as well. Lots to try to cover in these opening segments. But listen to The Five on Fox News as they talk about how desperation has set in among the Democrats. Clip eight.
We know they're desperate. Biden's in a free fall, which he is good at, which is why we have to push for total transparency in the election. Because remember, they interfered in this election with Lawfare right in front of you. Imagine what they're doing behind your back, right? Time Magazine boasted about the cabal to get Trump out of office in 2020. So they believe that they have the moral authority to do whatever is possible.
Every time I see this, I say, okay, yeah, where was this 3 years ago when you were intimidated into silence? He's right. Time Magazine admitted it. We had everything in place to keep him from winning re-election, and it worked. And then they bragged about it. And then they tell someone like this, now don't you dare talk about the election being rigged. Look at how they're trying to rig it right now. If, as Gutfeld says there, if they're trying to rig it, what, right? I mean, the Washington Post has a column today about, I can't believe the lawfare isn't working. What do you mean by working? I thought he's committed crimes and this is all a legitimate process. No, by working, they mean it's not hurting them in the polls. They're coming and saying the quiet part out loud. If this is what they're willing to do, right out into the open, to interfere in this election, this coming election, then what are they doing behind the scenes? Well, that's a good question, Mr. Gutfeld. What were they doing behind the scenes in 2020? Out in the open, they were censoring anyone that would dare talk about the Hunter laptop. Out in the open, 51 Intel officers, former and present, came forward and signed a document saying this is Russian disinformation. They lied. They were doing all those things right out in the open. Then you get the Twitter files and all that later, and you see what they were doing behind closed doors. And then you add to that all of the mules, the ballot harvesting, the mass mail-in ballots, the count shutting down, just in those 5-6 states, that's all. Everything else, I mean, they were done on election night, but not in the swing states. All carefully coordinated. Donald Trump was on with Hugh Hewitt as they talked about just the, coming back to yesterday's show, the hate that fuels all these operations against Trump, and whether or not with all of this strong polling, if Trump maybe is getting a little bit overconfident. Listen to this exchange, clip 11.
You've got people who, in this country, who hate you more than they hate Xi and Putin and Khomeini, these dictators, these torturers, these human rights crimes. What do you put that down to? Why do they hate? They're deranged.
Because I won an election against somebody that was supposed to win. It broke up their game, like, rather drastically, in all fairness. If you remember before that election, they thought they had it made. They took the convention center. They built the most beautiful venue I've ever seen. They spent millions. They spent $28 million building that thing. It was beautiful. They built a, it's like a picture. It was a beautiful picture of the United States. I've never seen anything like it. And then they lost.
The New York Times Siena poll this weekend said you're 12 points up in Nevada. Are you getting overconfident?
No, I'm not overconfident because I'm not overconfident because they cheat. You know, they cheat. Look, I have people saying, well, you know, you have to expect they're going to cheat 6, 7, 8 points. I said, I'm not expecting that at all. We have that, you know, covered, but they find new ways of cheating every time. It's they're professional cheaters.
He went on to tell Hugh Hewitt, now, you better be careful. You better not say that because they'll come after you. But I can say it. I can say it. Well, people, as I've pointed out in recent months, people from the conservative side are finally coming around and saying, boy, like you just heard from Gutfeld, if they're doing this right out in the open, what are they doing behind closed doors? The country, meanwhile, goes up in flames. In this morning's trumpet brief, Richard Palmer was talking about the statement the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, said yesterday that, well, yeah, I mean, we're kind of surprised by the inflation. Yeah, it really is hurting America. This is from Richard's brief. He told the Foreign Bankers Association that inflation figures were higher than I think anybody expected. And this is brought on by Joe Obama in direct response to all of these policies, the quantitative easing, just printing trillions, sending out stimulus checks, telling everybody to live in basements during 2020. During the scaremongering year, the scamdemic, and you've got runaway inflation as a response. And yet the fake president, he's out there saying, this is something he inherited. He's repeating the same lie that's already been debunked, that he inherited 9% inflation when it was actually 1.4%. And we noted this the other day. And yet here's this clip from yesterday, the same lie, clip 7.
I think inflation has gone slightly up. It was at 9% when I came in, and it's now down around 3%. But the fact is that I think people are just uncertain.
Right. It's just uncertainty. Everything's great, though, across the board. No, you drove it to 9%, and now you're scrambling to try to get it down to 3 or 4%, which, by the way, is still inflation. This still means it's the money's losing value. It's a lot worse than even what Trump had his final year. 1.4%. Richard, in his brief, we called it, and we don't have PhDs in economics. Not like Krugman and all the other brainiacs at the New York Times telling you months ago, everything's fine. Everything's fine. You can subscribe, by the way, to that morning brief at our website, thetrumpet.com. We send one out every morning. We send one out every evening. And together with that, I think there's an email blast that goes out advertising this program as well. They're not very long. It's a short little article that goes out with each email. So if you'd like to stay informed, make sure that you subscribe through email to that service. Richard said, just the law of cause and effect tells you everything that you need to know. You can't keep printing trillions and trillions of dollars and expect the dollars to hold their value. He also pointed to Haggai 1 in verse 6. You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. It says here, and he that earns wages to put it into a bag with holes. There's just not enough. It's losing its value. But here again, the law of cause and effect. I mean, what did these people, all of these experts, think was just like the COVID experts or the vaccine experts? What did they think would happen if you just kept right on spending trillions and trillions of dollars that you don't have? Richard Palmer says here, the difference between us and the highly educated, like Jerome Powell, is that the elite believe they can figure out a way to avoid the negative effects. You see, they can see the negative effects, inflation and other things, and they think that they can put Band-Aids on that or, you know, treat the wound and everything will be fine. They won't go back to the cause. Herbert Armstrong talked about the law of cause and effect over and again. You've got to get back to the cause. What is causing inflation? What's causing this crushing deficit or debt spending? They thought they could manage the inflation. Now they're finding out it's harder to get under control than they expected. Meanwhile, as trumpet writer Andrew Miller points out, inflation and high interest rates are causing families real pain. Real pain. This is from, if I can skip ahead here, where was that little? The Epoch Times. Why living standards decline as the economy appears to grow. You've got the Biden people out there saying, yeah, the economy's growing by 3%. Well, what does that mean? Epoch Times says, in the first quarter of 2021, that would be the first quarter that the fake president took control, backed by the dear leader. It says a worker with an average annual salary of $54,000 could get a 30-year mortgage at 2.9%. After putting 20% down on an average house, the monthly cost for mortgage and taxes was 16% of the worker's annual salary. This is a salary of just $54,000 3 years ago. It says here, today, with a mortgage rate of 7%, now it's 7%. The monthly cost of the mortgage takes 39% of the average worker's gross income. It says when buying a house is more than twice as difficult as it was 3 years ago, living standards are down, not up. And this doesn't even get into the fact that housing, homes cost nearly 100% more than they did 4 years ago. I saw one. It was a little farmhouse about 30, 40 miles from here on 16 acres. and it's going for $350,000 here in Oklahoma. It's a mobile home, basically. A couple of outbuildings, 16 acres, kind of out in the country. $350,000. How much was that property 3-4 years ago? I'm not an expert, but you can certainly see the skyrocketing costs for housing. And Oklahoma, by the way, some of you on the East Coast or the West Coast are probably saying $350,000, I'll take it. The standard of living is, I mean, everything's cheaper in the Midwest and in places like Oklahoma and Kansas and so on. But even here, you're feeling it. And if the wage is lower here and the property's not quite as expensive still, like the Epoch Times brings out, I mean, just with interest rates alone, more and more young people moving back in with their parents after college has ended, they don't see much hope for the American dream, you know, settling down, buying your own house. They see a life of renting because costs are so high. So it rings a little hollow when the Biden people go out there every day and say, yeah, the economy, we've recovered. Paul Krugman says so. We've recovered. Inflation is going down. I mean, just the term itself tells you what you need to know. Inflation is going up always, always, always. I mean, just because it's not going up by 9% like it was 2 years ago, and it's now at 3 or 4%, that doesn't mean it's going down. It just means it's not skyrocketing as bad as it was a couple years ago. But the experts, they can play with the numbers a little bit. They can play with the language. There was a CNBC article. It says, inflation is falling more slowly than expected. So you try to read between the words. Okay, what are you saying? It's not falling as slowly as we were hoping, but just the terms inflation, falling. You see how they play with the language. This article, this comes from the UK at the Telegraph. America's running out of money and nobody cares. Nobody cares. You hear, as far as Barack Obama's concerned, just keep printing trillions. If you bring in $4.5 trillion in tax revenue, it's no problem to spend $6.5 trillion or $7 trillion every year. Just keep adding to the deficit. This is the way these people think. The Telegraph is honest. America's out of money, and nobody seems to care about it. Nobody's doing anything about it. An economic specter haunts America. It's also one that many American politicians, Republican and Democrat, say a great deal about but are reluctant to address. That's right. Even the Republicans over on the MAGA side. The history shows that neither party, they talk about it. They talk about how it's causing inflation. They talk about how it's unsustainable, but they don't do anything about it. They never reduce their standard of living. They just keep wildly spending. On and on it goes. No end in sight. I mean, the Bush, what was it? I'm old enough to remember that during the George W. Bush years, what, the total debt, according to the debt clock, wasn't it like $5-6 trillion? And look at where we are today. I haven't even checked it recently. The mid-30s? In just what? Almost 20 years' time? It's unsustainable. It says, if you go to the Treasury's website, you can see just how big that debt is. In mid-May, it was $34.5 trillion. The pace of the growth in that debt is equally stunning. Approximately $1 trillion is being added to America's national debt every 100 days. Every 3 months. Every 3.5 months. Just add another trillion to these figures you see at the U.S. debt clock. No other country can do this because their currency isn't the world's reserve currency. What happens when the rug's pulled out from us? What happens when it no longer suits China and other nations to carry a significant chunk of America's debt? The headline says it all. America's running out of money, and nobody cares. Nobody does anything. this article talks about how that, you know, adding this kind of debt to your economy, you just don't see it happening except during a national crisis like a world war, like World War II. So you've got that when it really did shoot straight up, the debt burden facing the United States. And then you've got the wild spending of the dear leader's years. And it continues through the fake president, Joe Biden. Trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars. And then inflation skyrockets and they come out and say, hey, inflation is lowering. They lie, basically. The truth is that the rapid growth in America's national debt is driven by two factors. The first is spending on major entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare, and what's called income security. Taken together, all of it, 68% social programs. We're basically a socialist state. And the communists are in control at the moment. And Donald Trump may be able to reverse some of this, but how do you reduce these social programs that America is so dependent on? The second factor at work is the U.S. government tax revenues aren't covering government spending. In 2023, the federal government collected almost $4.5 trillion in revenue, but spent $6.16 trillion. And so what are you going to do if you're in charge as the communist? Well, then you've got to raise taxes, of course. If we're spending $6 trillion, we need to get another trillion in tax revenue. And just really, I mean, lower the boom on the American people. Just crush them under this debt burden as well. And they're doing it. They're doing it. CBS reported, I've had this in my notes for a few days now. The IRS says its number of audits is about to surge. Here's who the agency is targeting. You think they're just going after the rich, the wealthy? They're going after middle America. They're going into your pockets. The IRS, this all these tens of thousands of new IRS agents, that was packaged in the, if you can believe it, it was packaged in the Inflation Reduction Act. We're reducing inflation. Hey, we're adding all these IRS agents, and who are they targeting? Well, let CBS explain. The IRS says it's about to ramp up audits as it cracks down on tax cheats and seeks to deliver more revenue into the U.S. Treasury's coffers, but not every group of taxpayers will face more scrutiny, says the IRS commissioner. The IRS has been bolstered by $80 billion in new funding directed by the Inflation Reduction Act. You can't make this up. It says here, signed in 2022. On Thursday, the IRS outlined its plans for the funding, as well as its efforts to, so far, to burnish the agency's customer service operations. Further on, well, here it is. Werfel noted that the IRS strategic plan over the next three tax years include a sharp increase in audits, although the agency reiterated it won't boost its enforcement for people who earn less than $400,000 annually, which covers the bulk of U.S. taxpayers. So they'll go after the little guy. They'll talk about going after the big guy. They'll talk about going after the billionaires. But they're coming after the little guy as well. IRS says number of audits is about to surge. This is also from the Epic Times. Well, I read that a moment ago. This last story, I think that we have time for. Well, then let's skip ahead to this opinion piece at the Washington Post. Pretty hilarious. How in the world is Trump's trial not hurting him? How can this be possible? How is this Manhattan trial not hurting him? And so what this opinion writer pulls together is all of the experts over at the Washington Post to weigh in, to give their opinion. Well, here's why maybe it's not working like we thought that it would. This is, as I said earlier, it's like an admission. Yeah, the whole point of the lawfare was to destroy him politically. How is this not working? Well, what do you mean by that? I mean, he could still be convicted. What really troubles them is the increasing popularity. As Donald Trump said in that clip we played for you on Monday, he's more popular now than ever before. Vivek Ramaswamy. He was in the courtroom yesterday, as I've reported this week. A lot of Republicans are now showing up to show their support for Donald Trump. This was Vivek's take coming out of the courtroom, clip 9.
What are we seeing there? First of all, I learned a lot from being in there in person. It is one of the most depressing places I have been in my life, but it is fitting because the only thing more depressing than the environment of that courtroom is what's actually happening in there. It's straight out of a Kafka novel. The prosecution's main strategy appears to be to bore the jurors into submission. And if you look in that direction, sadly, it may appear to actually be working. The real bookkeeping that we need accounting of is Judge Merchan's own family member collecting millions of dollars as a Democratic operative, using the existence of this trial as a fundraising ploy for Democrats. This is unconscionable. Imagine if the same shoe fit the other foot.
They're going after Trump for a bookkeeping error that somehow violates a campaign finance law. And then look at the bookkeeping for the Merchan family, the judge and his activist daughter, just raking in millions, or at least a lot of money from Democrat donors. Where's the real conflict of interest here? This debate, just going back to what we touched on at the start, this is from Drudge. Whatever happened in Drudge? Sad. CNN debate, June 27th. Biden dares the Don, but will he be in prison? This is the story. It just keeps getting better and better. Is there enough time for Donald Trump to debate Joe Biden before he's carted off to prison? Well, we'll see about that. Vivek indicates that they may well be able to bore these jury members into conviction votes. Laura Ingraham over at Fox News, she's not so sure about that. Listen to clip 6.
All right, I'm no body language expert, and I could be wrong, but my novice reading is that there are at least 2 jurors, and perhaps as many as 4, who will not vote that Donald Trump is guilty, will vote not guilty on the evidence that was presented.
So she's evidently been in the courtroom as well. She's of the opinion that there's at least 2 that probably won't vote to convict. Maybe 4. And if that doesn't happen, that's the end of lawfare, at least with respect to squeezing it in before the November election. And so now comes the push, the intense pressure to, again, just like with the lawsuits earlier, we've got to do the debate soon. It's got to be in a few weeks. We've got to get on with this. It's going to backfire. Some way, somehow, it's going to backfire. I have to squeeze in Lawrence O'Donnell because he really sees Trump's sleeping habits as a foreboding sign of someone that's just about to, not the fake president. He's doing fine. I mean, he's challenging debates now. Listen to Lawrence O'Donnell wax eloquent last night about Trump closing his eyes during this Manhattan show trial, clip 5.
And Donald Trump, who is so aware of everything his face is doing when, for example, taking a mugshot or being on public display in any way, leaves his face with his eyes closed. In tortured, elderly shapes, when he drifts off into his closed eye space, his mouth shifts from its preferred scowl to the look of a collapsing old building. The mouth loses all shape. The lips become unrecognizable by the wrinkled curves that they take under those closed eyes that stay closed today longer than they have ever stayed closed in that courtroom. More than 10 minutes at a time. The old man sitting there in the defendant's chair, head tilted back to the right, eyes closed, made it look like a trial at a nursing home. If he were found like that in his chair at a table in the nursing home during lunch, he would be immediately checked for signs of life.
Trump derangement syndrome is real. What in the world? Lawrence O'Donnell is only 5 years younger than Trump. I mean, he's probably had a little more work on his face, but still 5 years. He's 72. And he's talking about what the tortured elderly shapes of Donald Trump's face? It's embarrassing. You really do feel sorry for these people. If we wouldn't laugh, we would cry, as Lincoln said. You do want to cry at times when you see all that's happening and people suffering right across the nation. And America just inviting all these problems, more and more and more problems in. And those out there, the propaganda chief saying, everything's fine. You know, I won both debates. You know, we've slapped these tariffs. Sundance had a good piece on that the other day. The tariffs that Biden's people put on these Chinese goods that don't even exist. Just tough talk. That's all that it amounts to. Even as they let China dominate trade and a lot of other things as well. And all that you get is tough sounding words. I'll meet with you, pal. We'll see how that meeting goes. June 27th is the date. I think I'll be watching along with quite a few other Americans on that day. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. When we come back, we will conclude with our short Bible study segment. We'll be right back.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States. One in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror. Their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Yesterday we talked about maintaining a single-minded focus on God, our Creator. We went through Matthew chapter 6, where the chapter concludes with God's admonition to seek Him first, to seek the kingdom of God first, to seek God's righteousness, and then to let God add those physical things where necessary. That's Matthew 6 and verse 33. And then the next verse says, Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. And so God says, don't just have all this anxiety over what might happen, what could be. Just learn to walk by faith. Have that singular focus and trust God. Verse 22, just to back up a little bit, it says, the light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. If you have a single-minded focus for God and what is important to God, God and His work, as I said yesterday on the show, then that's just going to light up your whole life. Luke 9 and verse 62 says that if we put our hand to the plow and then look back, we're not fit for this glorious reward. That's my paraphrase of it, but you can look at that verse later, Luke 9 verse 62. It's kind of like Lot's wife. I mean, here God was opening the way for them to be rescued, saved from a dying civilization or a dying society. And yet she turned around. She looked back longingly, and she turned into a pillar of salt. God wants us to go forward with Christ. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. To follow, to lay aside those sinful weights that slow us down in this race, and to just follow after Jesus Christ with a single-minded focus, with a Matthew 6:33 focus or charge. This is from an article my father wrote back in 2017. This was at thetrumpet.com. And again, if you don't subscribe to the Trumpet magazine, call our operators today and request your free one-year subscription. No cost, no obligation. The number 1-866-930-3024. And one thing you'll get if you subscribe to the Trumpet is, well, we often talk about tomorrow's news today, but you're also going to get a real sense of urgency that comes through in those articles. That message comes through loud and clear in America Under Attack and other writings that we offer without cost or obligation. Here we are, we're living in the very last days. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about the gun lap. My father alludes to that in this 2017 piece. We're in the gun lap that Herbert Armstrong referred to so often in A Plain Truth Personal from 1967. Mr. Armstrong said, "We come now to the final stretch of the work. In a mile or 2 mile race, officials fire a revolver in the air as the runners begin the last lap. They call it the gun lap. This work of God leading to Christ's coming has now entered its gun lap. We must now put on the final extra burst of effort for the very few remaining years." I mean, we're coming right down the home stretch. I was watching the end of the Thunder game the other night against Dallas, and, you know, the Thunder pulled it out, which makes people in Oklahoma really happy. But that last stretch of the game, both teams were just on fire and focused. There were a few missed shots, but it was remarkable just how locked in both. They knew the final buzzer was about to sound. And no doubt it gave them an extra sense of urgency and sharper focus. This is what God wants for us to build into our spiritual lives, into our spiritual race. Paul often used analogies that revolved around sports. You can see it in 1 Corinthians 9 and Ephesians 6. A lot of passages where, you know, you can look at an athlete that's been really well trained and has worked hard to refine his craft, and then you see how that they perform under pressure. I mean, I guess there's a few exceptions. Not everyone's Michael Jordan, but everyone that really puts in their time and has that singular focus, I mean, you usually see how it plays out when it comes to game time. This is from the New Throne of David book. My father says, "We live in the most urgent time ever. We must be willing to go any place and do anything God wants. We must get our minds conditioned to do that. God often offers opportunities or directs us to do things we don't want to do humanly. We all have to do things we would rather not do. That's good for us," he says. "We must have a mindset that whatever God says, we will do. That will bring the most wonderful reward you could possibly receive." So God does challenge us. He does apply some pressure. And we've talked about that to some degree this week. But like we just read in Matthew 6, I mean, you don't have to have all this anxiety. Just let the pressure. I mean, let God, as I said on Monday's show, just let God and Jesus Christ have their way. And just accept the fact that it is the straight and narrow way, that there will be some fiery trials from time to time, because God wants to see if we'll trust Him, if we'll follow Him, if we'll put our faith in Him. He wants to lead us to victory. Verse 23, it says, "But if your eye be evil, the whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you be darkness, how great is that darkness?" The focus is on evil, if it's on worldliness, it's just going to fill our whole life. Garbage in, garbage out, as the saying goes. So how important is that that start to your day. Just keeping this in mind, what Matthew 6 says here. To get that day off to a rousing start, spiritually speaking, and then letting that spiritual momentum carry with you on the job, in the classroom, in your social activities, in your entertainment choices, all those things. This is from my father's book on Micah, the little book at the end of the Old Testament, or near the end. It says, he's talking about Micah 1 and verse 8, and he says it illustrates the kind of extreme dedication we need to have in supporting God's warning message. We don't make the attention-getting howls of the jackals and shrieks of the ostriches, but we do let these expressions help build in us the very extreme dedication we must have for God's work. You think about so many of the analogies that are there in the Bible, or even just the actual activities of a faithful prophet of God, some of the things they went through to just demonstrate to God that they were in it to serve from the heart, even if it meant going through some uncomfortable stretches, even if it meant looking a little bit crazy to those around them. My father says, how deeply are we stirred to get behind the most important message on earth? Do we have Micah's passion? You see this in all of the prophets of old. You see this in the disciples of Christ. You see it in the apostles of the First Testament. You saw it in Herbert Armstrong. My father has that same passion. I mean, that's just the way God is. God's greatest passion is for this work to go out to the largest audience possible, and for this work to clear the way for Jesus Christ's return to this earth, and for us along the way to be trained and prepared for our role as teachers in the world tomorrow, as the bride of Christ, as the mother of billions. It says here, we must have urgency to fit the times. Does your sense of urgency fit the times that we're in? I gave you an email yesterday, some feedback from a young listener who admitted, you know, he veered off course and now he's trying and it's hard. It's hard to get it back on track. But if you sense the urgency of the times, that can be a great motivator to get your life back on God's track, to lay aside those weights and to really run in this race. My father says in that same quote from the Micah booklet that we all need to be a little more urgent, and we will be if we fully understand the times we're living in and what's coming upon this earth. Look at what we worked our way through in the first segment. The single greatest superpower in the history of the world, and look at what's happening to the United States. The dollar's reign is about over, so says the Telegraph, and nobody's doing anything about it. They're just going to let it collapse under the weight of this unbelievable debt burden and wild spending. I saw another headline saying how many people have maxed out. I think it's like a third of Americans. They've maxed out their credit cards. We're not saving money, whether as individuals or a society, as a government. We're not saving for the future. We're not saving for our children. It's just a free-for-all. It's just a money grab. Anyone that can get into the treasury, they're helping themselves. Micah's intense emotion was a product of God's Holy Spirit. He was full of the Spirit. You can see a reference to that in Micah 3 and verse 8. It says, he was urgent like God. Our goal must be to have God's emotions, God's urgency. Just seeing some great catastrophe could never make us urgent like God, but being filled with God's Holy Spirit can and will. I mean, we see a lot of catastrophes all around, but that's not going to fill us with the proper emotion. We need to be fueled by the Spirit of God. We need to be fueled by the truth of God. We have to develop a wartime mentality, my father says, to deliver God's final warning to a dying world. God's put a heavy responsibility on his church. And there's only a faithful few scattered over all the earth that pour their hearts into that work, into supporting that worldwide work. If you're not one of them, you can be. You should be. That book, Micah, I forget the exact title of it, but I've mentioned a few other things as well. The 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.